and welcome to another amazing podcast with my co-host, Hunter. I don't know how to pronounce your last name.
Van Lierop.
Van Lierop. It's Dutch. It's Dutch?
It is Dutch. It means from Lierop. It's like a weird town in
Deutschland. That is, you are definitely a fun and a weird person, and you got a weird last name, and I love it.
It fits.
And James Santana.
Hey, guys.
What's up, James? How's that Superman tattoo going for you?
Good. It actually finally healed.
Awesome. And I am the astonishing Danielle Cerno. Everybody calls me Danny. Just don't call me late to dinner.
I don't think any of us would be late to dinner.
All right. So, what are we doing today, guys? Let's talk about some news. James, why don't you pick up with this Patrick Gleason thing going on?
So, this week, Marvel announced an exclusive deal with Patrick Gleason, taking over the artwork for Amazing Spider-Man, starting... later this year, actually.
I think it's issue 20, after the next arc.
Yes, so later this year. Out too. Yeah. Yes, that's the whole controversy around this. Yeah. The big problem. For everyone, if you don't know, Patrick Gleason was currently doing the artwork for Young Justice.
He also did the artwork for Rebirth Superman before Bendis took over.
Yes. So this kind of is weird, because the selling point for Amazing Spider-Man lately was the Ryan Otley Nick Spencer team-up. This was supposed to be Ryan Otley's big book outside of Independence. He's really known for Invincible, written by Robert Kirkman.
And you can actually really tell that it's his artwork. Peter Parker's face just looks exactly like the main character from Invincible.
Of course, of course. But the big problem is that with Patrick Gleason jumping onto the book, now we know Ryan Otley's off, so...
He left after like issue 3, didn't he?
Yeah, they did guest spots.
That's what the problem is. He was supposed to be the main artist on the book. And it's fine. Greg Rucka did that with Wonder Woman. He had two artists on Wonder Woman. One did the true storyline, one with the year one cheetah story. So that was a way for them to balance off each other for workload.
They did that with Green Arrow as well.
Right.
Ferreira and the other one.
But the problem with this is that Marvel's selling point with the relaunch of Spider-Man post-Secret Wars, post-Dan Slott's, you know, massive run of the book was Ryan Otley and Nick Spencer. And a lot of people got drawn to reading Amazing Spider-Man because of Ryan Otley's artwork and seeing him do Invincible. Well, there's no details of why Ryan Otley left the book. There's no details about... exactly what was going on behind the scenes with him or Nick Spencer.
My only guess is he was late.
And that's what I think so, too.
They needed Gleason, who's been consistent late.
Well, we don't even know. We know Gleason was last doing Young Justice, and then all of a sudden Instagram and Newsarama and Comic Resource
cool,
and Bleeding Cool was like, hey, he's exclusive to Marvel, and there's a massive poster that he did. If not, if you want to check out the poster, you can go to Newsarama's website. You can actually see the poster that Gleason did for Marvel. Which I'm assuming didn't take a day to do.
No.
So this has been probably in the works for a while. But yeah.
Probably since he left Superman.
Probably.
And then he just did Young Justice to hold himself over to get paid. And then...
yeah.
Because Otley still had to do his run that he was probably signed for.
Yeah.
Because it's usually not just like, you're on this book, you sign contracts.
Mm-hmm.
You're contractually obligated to get this much done.
Yeah. I mean, he was freelance before that. That's the difference.
Yeah.
He wasn't signed exclusively to DC. This would be actually...
oh, Gleason, yeah.
Gleason, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, Gleason wasn't signed exclusively to Marvel, to DC for this. So him going exclusively to Marvel means that he's not doing anything.
Yeah,
he's only doing Marvel projects.
It's probably gonna be 6.
Yeah, it's either only Marvel projects he's gonna be doing, or any they can't stop you from doing creative.
A lot of exclusive, it just stops you from writing for DC if you're a Marvel guy or Marvel for DC, etc.
Yeah, exactly.
They just let you do the indies. I think Bendis still writes his independent stuff.
But it's all Jinx World. That's all.
Oh, yeah, they brought it over. Yeah.
With that news, we're going to move over to more Marvel news. Danny, what's up with Marvel?
Okay, so I don't know if you told from the last podcast when I told you guys that, you know, I was a little bit more excited for the Dark Phoenix than I was Spider-Man, even though I love them both equally. This one kind of also, you know, pokes at my soul a little bit, but we've been hearing about the New Mutants for God knows how many years now.
Too many.
Too many.
I mean, and it's just kind of like, you know, when somebody gives you a cookie and then they take it away and they keep teasing you. Well, Marvel and Disney have now pushed back the New Mutants from August of this year to April 3rd of 2020. So we have to go through a whole winter and Christmas and all that fun stuff before we get to the New Mutants. I say we abolish Christmas this year and go right to the New Mutants.
Yeah. The movie was actually supposed to come out last June.
Think about this way.
And they just keep pushing it back. I think it was because of the midst of the merger.
Well, even beyond that, think about this. Maisie Williams, who's Arya on Game of Thrones, is Wolfsbane on this. She's like 12 in that movie. She's 20-something years old now in real life.
And what's her name? Dark Phoenix. Sophie Turner.
Yeah, does she?
Yes.
But it's weird. It's very weird. And a lot of it... So a lot of background deals that happen... Yes, Hunter, you're right. I think part of it was...
The merger.
But even before that, they had pushed it back...
They pushed it back once before the merger.
Yeah.
And when the merger officially went in, they pushed it back a second time, and this is the third one.
Right.
So, and then they said it was supposed to be exclusive on Hulu.
That was a rumor. That was always a rumor.
Okay.
I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to that.
No.
But it's definitely going to chop its viewing down.
The biggest problem, though...
It's box office, I mean.
Right. But that's not... See, the biggest problem is that this is a... If this was just like a Netflix movie, when you know how Netflix makes movies and how Hulu makes original content... Yeah. The problem is they didn't make this for original content and in contracts.
They meant to expand the Fox universe.
Well, not even just that. In movie contracts, they can't... If you sign a contract for a movie, you have a choice. You get your salary, which is X amount, or you get gross. Meaning, if you sign up for gross, it has to be... It's under the premise that it's going to be released to the public in a movie theater in some sort of capacity, whether it's a limited theatrical release or not.
If it's a bomb, you're not getting a lot of gross.
Right. So you're banking on the movie making some money so you can get some money back in return. So if any of these actors signed gross in their contract, they have to, because the contract stipulates this was for a theatrical release. Mm-hmm. It's all stipulated, like Will Smith with Bright. In his contract somewhere, it will say for Netflix exclusive only. There is no gross.
Yeah, so it's a salary.
It's a salary. Yeah. No, you can't do anything. The problem is this wasn't meant for that.
Yeah.
So they have to release it. Or
it's done. They've
it's
done.
Done. It's
reasons.
Been done.
They did a lot of reshoots, but it's done.
It's been done for almost 2 years now. Yeah. It either release it...
Well, they were ready to release it 2 years ago.
Just release it.
And then they did reshoots last year.
What's the point? We all know it's going to flop.
Well, people are going to see it, but it's not going
to
do good.
I need to see it with my big bucket of popcorn, Butterfinger. You know this. You know, like when Homer Simpson sits there and he's eating his snacks during Super Bowl?
You got
like
butter the milk duds.
Like, exactly. You got to butter the milk duds. You know, so... Oh, and happy belated X-Men Day.
Yes.
You know, I actually thought it was X-Men Day today.
It's not.
I messaged you guys early in the morning, like, hey, happy X-Men Day, guys.
And I was like,
no.
He missed it.
You're like, your
but
day
it's
behind.
Okay.
I was caught up with other stuff, and then I got my social medias were like, it's X-Men Day. And I was like, that's today, obviously.
No. What X-Men Day is, it's the 20-year anniversary of X-Men, the first movie. Hunter, you were one when that movie came out.
I was one and a half, almost two.
That's amazing.
And it's crazy. 20 years ago, 11-year-old Danielle was so excited to see Wolverine on the big screen.
I wasn't.
You weren't, because Wolverine's not a big part of the X-Men.
Yeah,
back in the day.
Well, not
giant. Well, giant.
I have my problems.
Yeah,
there's issues with
separate
that
movie. Episode. All right. Separate episode.
Long story short, we love the X-Men. We want the New Mutants.
Push back.
I'm going to smack you. who wants to talk about Dark Horse now?
I'm going to talk about Dark Horse.
Right.
So Dark Horse signed a merger with Netflix to get a bunch of exclusive publishing deals and properties thrown over into their exclusives. Just similar to Mark Millar, how he got Sharky, he got Nemesis, he got some Jupiter stuff. A lot of his books are being turned into shows for Netflix or movies for Netflix. Dark Horse now signed their own official deal. There's nothing that's been said in the announcement. But a lot of people are talking about how they, after Umbrella Academy, Netflix was pitched Concrete and Harrow County. I haven't read any of those, but I heard Harrow County's amazing. And if they do get an announcement, I'm down to pick it up.
Harrow County is a really good book. The thing with this whole merger.
Oh, yeah, it ties back into what we're just talking about.
Yeah. Back to a lot of mergers and interesting new stuff. Dark Horse has been acquiring a bunch of properties. Because they don't have much left with Disney's acquisition of Fox. And this is the only speculation. We don't know what they're actually going to end up doing.
But
a lot of things, like, because Fox was Aliens, Fox was
Predator,
Planet of the Apes,
Terminator,
RoboCop, a bunch of The Simpsons.
A lot of stuff that Dark Horse was really founded on.
Yes, that Dark Horse doesn't print their own books, really. Very rarely do they have their own line of books, besides Hellboy. But that's a movie thing.
Yeah. First they lose Star Wars, now they lose yeah. Fox stuff. Yeah. And that's half their entire thing.
It's all licensing. But with the plus side, with them going to Netflix, anybody that is creator-owned that was under Darkest umbrella has a chance now to do a show without having it do or having to go through a network.
Yeah, they don't have to try to pitch it to Sci-Fi. They don't have to try to pitch it to HBO. They can just go, hey, Netflix, you signed for Dark Horse. This is a Dark Horse property. I'm pushing it to you. Do you want it, yes or no? And I feel like they're a little more obligated, Netflix, to actually accept Dark Horse properties when they're pitched.
Yeah. I mean, they're not obligated, really.
They feel more of a... It's more at ease, I would think, because it's already signed exclusively, like, the merger to them.
Yes.
So it's like, why not?
I mean, to an extent, you're right. You're 100% right with that. Sorry.
Standpoint, you know.
Yeah, no, you're right. The biggest thing about Dark Horse's Netflix merger inquiry contract is that they have access to creators that they didn't have beforehand. So now, we'll use Umbrella Academy as the biggest example.
That's
the best example.
Yeah, yeah. It's the one they have out right now.
Right. And the plus side to it without spoiling Umbrella Academy, we won't go into a deep dive here, but if you read the Umbrella Academy books, it's very different from the show and vice versa.
There's a lot of similarities, but...
Right. Yeah. If you watch the show, if you did both, congratulations, you have a big like heads up on a lot.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of Easter eggs and nods in the show
for sure.
Compared to the book. The plus size with books is that they have the unlimited budget of doing special effects. There's no anything like that. So I think Dark Horse's best bet and Netflix's best bet at this time is do something like a Harrow County, where it's a slice of life type of story.
Yeah, it's more of like, because Umbrella Academy doesn't have like a lot of the budget that it should. It's a superhero-esque story with sci-fi elements.
Right.
I think the best thing they should do, like you said, Harrow County, because it's more down-to-earth compared from what you've told me.
Mm-hmm.
It's more down-to-earth than Umbrella Academy or, I know they can't use it, but Alien Predator.
Right.
That seems like big-budget stuff.
Yes.
Netflix isn't going to jump on immediately.
Right.
They
want
more easy stuff, similar to like how the Outcast show was. On Cinemax, that show didn't have a big budget, but it was... The only budget they really had was, like, for the demon-y stuff.
Right.
But a lot of it was just people with different, like, voices and eyes and the black mist or whatever.
Yeah, and I think it's in Netflix's best interest to grab Dark Horse where they can. They already have Mark Millar signed there.
Yeah.
You know, with his Miller World.
Yeah.
They have now Dark Horse with their books. You know, they missed out with... Who has Amazon? Someone signed exclusively to Amazon. Oh, it's not Dynamite, but it's like similar.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Liefeld.
What
it was. Yeah. Yeah, what it was.
Really?
Yeah. That was a while back.
Oh. Didn't know about that.
Yeah, that was a while back. Yeah, his stuff got optioned, but I think it was to Amazon. If I'm wrong, someone...
Oh, The Boys.
No, that's Dynamite.
That's Dynamite.
Dynamite. That's going to Amazon. Yeah.
Yes,
that's what you're trying to...
That's what it is.
Dynamite
was... And what else is going to Amazon? East of West.
East of West, and it was supposed to be also Invincible.
Invincible. Oh, which
the animated show.
A cartoon that should be coming out in 2020.
And it's Seth Rogen is signed on to do some of it, and hopefully it's as gory as the books.
Yeah.
Oh. I was afraid.
I'm not done with the book.
Phenomenal.
I'm not done with the book. I know I'm years behind, guys.
Yeah. Okay. I only finished it. I just ended up getting the last 100 books. I read the previous ones after I read them. I started in the middle.
Right.
Which is bad.
But yeah.
I started after the time skip. Like, oh.
That's fine.
I'm only on volume 5.
There's a lot.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot.
There's a lot.
I want to get the
compendium. 144 issues.
Yes.
Wow. It's massive. But to talk about Massive Comics and now Massive Moves, we're going to move on to some DC news. Danny, take it away.
Okay. Two of the biggest books I think DC has going right now, which is Doomsday Clock and Heroes in Crisis, have been pushed back to coincide with Doomsday Clock number 10. And Heroes was pushed back.
Yeah. And Doomsday Clock's been pushed back.
It's been 2 years, and I just can't wait to get the next issue. Dying. You know, do we expect to see a crossover? Do you guys think that...
They said that there's some bleed over into the ending. We don't know the ending of Heroes in Crisis.
Right.
We can kind of figure out what it is, because, you know, with everything that's been happening in the last 8 issues.
Right.
Yeah. But they said that there's going to be some crossover into it, which means probably something with Wally or with Booster or Superman Batman's Sanctuary stuff.
Honestly, it's probably going to be more closely tied to Wally.
Yeah, because Wally was in Rebirth.
Wally was the linchpin in Rebirth. Mm-hmm. And now having his story in Heroes, it's the big part of it.
Yeah.
So having however Heroes are going to end, you can't bleed it directly into... how Doomsday Clock 10 is going to be, because last time we left off with Heroes in, with Doomsday Clock 10 or 9. 9?
No. Doomsday Clock 9 just ended with the fight on the moon.
Yeah.
Yes, because Dr. Manhattan. Right.
So, with the with the way that ended, we can't be like, oh, hey, Wally's going to be there. It's probably explained why Wally wasn't there at the final the battle on Mars.
Yeah, we'll find out in Heroes
of Christmas. And I think that's what they're trying to say without giving away. Right. Without giving away one or the other.
He's probably going to die.
Yeah.
He's probably going to die.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I wouldn't be surprised. He's going to redeem himself from Heroes in Crisis and then sacrifice himself to save everyone else from what's happening. Or even run back through time to help the people who were... They weren't killed, but they were heavily injured from Manhattan.
Right. Exactly. So we'll see with that.
I think it's coming out... It was pushed back a week later.
Beyond that, we're going to move on to our big Marvel news. The biggest of Marvel news besides the Patrick Gleason thing is like
Big, but this is bigger.
So really,
quite literally,
big thing with Marvel now. We're about to hit. Apparently, it's the year of 1000s because Marvel 1000 is coming out. Marvel
with 55 covers.
55 creators.
I'm kidding. I know. When I read it before, I said covers, and I was like, "I'm sorry, it's been a long day at work."
It's Marvel 1000 is going to be an 80-page special. 80-page special, yep.
80 pages.
80 pages. With 55 right now creator
55 team. Plus creator teams.
Yes. 55 have been confirmed.
Yes.
And we don't know the rest. Al Ewing's 11 of them.
Al Ewing's on 11.
They're like, Al Ewing, I'm sorry you're busy writing.
But it's only one-page stories.
Yeah, but
it's not hard to write a one-page story.
But he's busy writing Hulk and now Valkyrie coming out.
Yeah.
So, like, hey, can you not do, like, the one big, like, your best-selling book right now. Stop that to do 11 one-page stories.
Yeah.
Which is half a full issue.
One's going to be Hulk and one's going to be probably Jane Foster.
I hope that's what it is. Even beyond that, nice. Marvel 1000 is Marvel's not first milestone, but it's a milestone for Marvel Comics, the actual comic book Marvel Comics.
Yeah, they said if they kept going, this would be their landmark year.
Yes.
Which is just an excuse to be like, we're going to hit the same thing DC's been doing because we're not close.
For like the last 2 years.
The closest one is Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Spider-Man
800 was last year. So, our big topic for today is Milestone Comics. Not the company Milestone,
but Milestone
in comics. Milestones in comics.
Milestone numbers.
Yes. So, a brief history of what Milestone Comics are and Milestones in comics are and kind of like what they mean. Milestones in comics are big, normally whole numbers. You start off with your 10, then your 25, your 50, your 100, 150, 200, and then every triple digit whole number after that.
200, 300, etc.
Exactly.
And you don't have to buy a gift like you would somebody's like milestone anniversary. Your gift is investing in buying the comic.
But with that little history, kind of, each of those milestones only is a way for a writer or an artist to explore something. Normally, it's an end of an arc or a start of an arc or a big special event. Either way, it's always...
Or for Dan Slott, it's the middle.
Yeah.
And then he releases an issue after to mess up the numbering.
But with all that...
You have no idea. I'm so upset about that.
But with all that... Clearly, that's not his favorite. We're going to talk about
800 is my favorite, but 801 is not.
We're going to talk about our favorite moments. Clearly. We're going to talk about our favorite moments and our favorite milestone books that ever come out. Starting with Hunter, clearly with his Spider-Man book.
Spider-Man 800. So, Dan Slott was leading up to this huge event with Norman Osborn getting Carnage becoming Red Goblin. And it all finishes up in issue 800, which starts with the finale of the book, and then how Dan Slott's writing kind of intertwines with the rest of the other stories. It's callbacks, there's supporting characters. Flash Thompson, my boy, Flash Thompson, he ends up dying, which, oh my god, dude, I was crying. I was actually crying. I was like, no, because we had Flash through, was it 2013, all the way up to 2015, 2016, and then he was out of books, then Eddie came back, and then he was back in, and then there was all this stuff. And seeing him die and seeing Peter finally reveal that he is Spider-Man, he was Flash's hero. Oh, dude. Tugs on the heartstrings. That's why it's one of my favorite milestones. Not just because it's Spider-Man. I'm a huge Spider-Man fanboy. Then Dan Slott had the balls to go, wait, guys, at 800, I'm not done. Here's 801, which is a filler issue that just kind of wraps up like, it's some dude filming a documentary about Spider-Man, which is really cool, but they should just put it in the end of 800.
Right.
Because then the new legacy numbers, Spider-Man number one with Spencer and Otley is actually 802. And then 2 is 803. The numbers, my OCD can't It doesn't work. It pisses me off so much. Dan Slott, what'd you do? Love your writing? What'd you do?
Danny, what's your favorite Milestone book?
Oh, well, it's going to have to be a superhero that I hold near and dear to my heart, which I'm also going to be doing my book review this week, but it's going to be Action Comics 1000.
Woo! That one's recent.
That is recent. That's yes. That's last summer.
Last year.
Last right? summer. Yep. That was last summer. That was the first 1,000 book produced.
Yep.
Why is it your favorite?
You know, just the little stories that they had in the comic at the time, I think it just kind of pulled at my heartstrings. Talk about bunch. It. I know. We're bad. Just on a personal note, Superman was actually the first superhero that I fell in love with.
Aww.
So to watch Superman for, you know, the 30 years that I've been on this earth and, you know, the 25 plus years that I've been reading comics, just to see him and, you know, have that milestone and, you know, have talking to my grandparents about, you know, Superman and what he meant to them when they were growing up, it's just something that I'm so, I guess you could say, thankful for, that, you know, I'm here to celebrate that milestone with DC and its fans and Clark Kent and his family.
That's pretty cool. That's actually dope. That's actually the best reason I've ever heard to, like, read a comic and enjoy a comic book.
Better than me complaining about Dan Slott getting another number. I love Spider-Man. The ending of the story was great.
Danny actually goes in, there's a real reason why I actually like this book.
Oh. You know what? And it even goes back to not even just 1,000, but 999. I believe that was the issue where he's kind of just flying around and, like, talking about different things that happened in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it just pulls at the heartstrings and it makes you connect with those characters even more. And that, I think, as comic fans, is what makes it so special to us.
Right.
You know, it's not just paper and words and artwork. It's, you create a connection with that character.
Right. And honestly, you're right. And that's, I think Action Comics 1000 truly embodies that with Superman. Not only, I felt, and I've read Detective 1000, Action 1000, ASM 800. There's been a couple of other milestones in the last couple of years I actually own, which is like Wonder Woman 600. They did a big special issue for Captain America 600. 700 was the newest one. My favorite is 600.
Yeah, let's get into that.
Yes. So, my favorite milestone in comics is Captain America 600. Cover was done by Alex Ross, and it's a swipe cover. What swipe cover is, it's an homage cover. It's a swipe cover of Captain America number 1. So, but instead of Cap punching a Nazi, it's Falcon punching a Nazi, which is great. But what I kind of like, I'm always a World War II sucker. Anything World War II related, I'm in. So, I kind of liked the story to begin with. And it wasn't like the other... The Captain America issue was more reflective of something similar to the ASM 800. Where it's just a part of the actual story... storyline they were in at the time, and I think they kind of missed the boat a little bit, even though it's still my favorite. It was cool wrap up of the story. It was during, I want to say, Avengers Standoff at the time. I think it was right during Avengers Standoff, because they weren't doing Legacy numbering yet.
No,
it was right before or during Avengers Standoff, so they kind of were like, hey, this is what it is, and I liked it. It just got lost in it, but it's always my favorite just because of the cover and the story. I was really into Avengers at the time. It was kind of cool to see that homage of it. They actually went on their way to make... So, hey, Falcon is the new Cap. But it does kind of hit the same note as your ASM 800. It's like, oh, it's part of the story, and it's not celebrating
it. The issue after kind of ruins it. Not that 801 ruined it. It was a really good story. Right. And then 601 just kind of continues off with this. Action Comics and Detective Comics, they started brand new storylines, but it was also an homage to the 100,000 books and all the years that they've been around.
And that's why I think DC has done very well with their milestones here. Even like with Wonder Woman 600, it's the first part of the story is the actual continuation of it. But anything else is just like Detective 1000 and Action 1000. It was here's a story with Wonder Woman as a kid written by this person, and this story of Wonder Woman written by this person and drawn by this person. It was, again, a collective history of Wonder Woman drawn by people who know and love her, and that's, we got that with Action, and we got that definitely with Detective. So I'm hoping with this Marvel Comics 1000, we get more of that, going, hey, here's the history of Marvel Comics. Here is fun stuff with Marvel. My fear is that they're one-page stories, though. That's my biggest fear, that you're going to get lost in this shuffle going.
Marvel Thousands.
Right.
I hope it's like how the X-Men Holiday Classic special was this past year, where they had the little stories.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yes. That would be actually cool.
That would be perfect. That would be cool. Because when you have these milestone issues, it's like, you know, when you're in your early 20s or your 30s or whatever, you know, or your 40s, and you're picking up these milestone issues, it's these core values, you know.
Yeah, that you follow the entire
time. You follow it. So it's like when you pick that up, it's like, you know, 10-year-old you picking up that X-Men or that, you know, Hulk book all over again.
Yeah.
Because you're getting, you know, old stuff and you're getting new stuff. And it's just, it just makes you grow as a comic fan.
That's true. And I think Milestone Comics kind of need to reflect the history of the character more than just being an end or beginning of a story.
Yeah, well, it was Spider-Man 800. Yeah. So it's not like it was Spider-Man 1000 where... 800, you don't really need to reflect on. 800, the story, it was the still $10 book.
Yeah.
It had the whole story. It did have a backup story, I believe, at the end where it was a little, you know... And then 801 was the official backup story, you know?
Yeah.
But with instead of Captain America 6 and 700, they weren't, like... memories, they weren't old, you know, they didn't hark back to you as a kid reading the books for the first time. When Spider-Man gets to 1,000 and same with Captain America, and hopefully with Marvel Comics 1,000, they do, you know, tug at the old nostalgia strings we all have.
Yeah. And that's what it is. I just really hope that Marvel kind of sees it. It's cool to see all those creative teams. It's cool.
Oh, I can't wait. It's great. A bunch of creative teams that I love. And I didn't even think we're going to be together ever.
Exactly. And I think...
And then Al Ewing.
Yeah,
half of Al Ewing. They're Al Ewing with everybody else. It's like, they should have just done Al Ewing as the writer for all of them and then random artists.
Yeah, like it's because he's doing literally, he's doing an eighth of the book. He's doing an eighth of the book. But that's the thing. I really think Marvel's doing it as a, not publicity thing, because it's great that they can show this and hey, they don't, because Marvel Comics itself hasn't been around in a very, very long time.
They stopped a while ago.
So, you know, it goes back to October 1939. You know, it was Human Torch on the cover, you know, coming out of his, like, oxygen tank.
Because it wasn't Johnny, it was
Jim Hammond.
It was Jim Hammond.
Here's something with the Marvel 1000. Now, we all know that Marvel was famous for their monster stories. Yeah. Did we see any monster stories coming into this?
They do have a couple. Juan Ferreira is a well-known horror artist. He did Gotham by Midnight, Second Arc. He did Colder, which is one of my favorite Dark Horse books of all time. He's done a bunch of like horror stuff. And he just recently did Green Arrow. Not a horror book, but
yeah.
Still, he made the villain in the first couple arcs, the one with the arrowhead.
Oh, the Night Circle.
Yeah. Make really look really creepy.
Yeah.
So hopefully they do have a couple horror stories, maybe like a Hulk horror story.
Yeah. I mean, honestly. Or something like that. You're right. I think it's.
I think Werewolf by Midnight would be. Werewolf by Night would be cool to see. Do a horror story.
I think if they're going to lay it out properly, it's going to be the history-ish of Marvel, but not a history of the Marvel Universe. Because Mark Waid's coming out with that in July. You know, it's like, hey.
I think each page is going to be. I mean, it's obviously going to be different stories. I think it's going to be different heroes, too. Yeah. Like, Cap, Iron Man, all the characters that have books right now will definitely get a page.
Yeah.
And then we'll get some weird ones like Howard the Duck. Or something like that.
And you know you're rooting for that. Might be the book that Taboo does.
Yeah. No, please. Black Eyed Peas.
But moving on out of Milestone, we're going to jump into Now Books. Hunter, you want to open us up with this week's book review?
If I haven't been talking about Spider-Man enough on the podcast, I'm going to talk about more Spider-Man. I'm doing Spider-Man Life Story number 3, which is the 80s. It's written by Chip Zdarsky and drawn by Mark Bagley. You guys know I love Spider-Man.
Of course.
Seeing him age in real time is honestly scary, because with the last issue, we know he's going to die. But with this issue, we see him in 84, and that's when Secret Wars took place. So we see him in Secret Wars with a bunch of other older characters. And it's really cool to see. My favorite moment from it is the splash page that we see with all the heroes, old, young. Captain America's still super young. Reed Richards is old, though. Peter's wearing a new costume. We see Cyclops with a vest on for reasons. And just seeing everybody again, even if they're not as old as like an Old Man Logan story, it's just really cool to see. There's a bunch of moments in here that really surprise you. MJ's pregnant. She has twins. Aunt May's going through Alzheimer's and forgetting a bunch of stuff, and she takes the babies and gets lost. Things that are said, it's so good. I can't wait for Chip Zdarsky to finish this story. You think he's a comedy writer, but then he writes depressing shit like this, and I'm like, oh my god.
Out of scale 1 to 5, what'd you give it?
Honestly, I'd have to give it a 5.
Okay.
This book, honestly surprised me. Issue one was fantastic. Issue two, a little bit rocky. Okay. I like the ending of it, though, with Gwen Stacy. But this one, geez, just hits you hard. And I cannot wait for issue four, because it's a 10-year jump. It's not like it's like, oh, the next day in Peter's life. It's 10 years later, where are the gaps? We need them filled.
Right.
So it's really cool.
Cool. Danny, what'd you read for us this week?
Well, like Hunter said, he hasn't spoken enough about Spider-Man. I don't think I've nearly spoken enough about Superman. So I'm going to go ahead and talk about Superman number 11 that came out this week, which is written by Brian Michael Bendis with art by Ivan Reis. And the book starts out with Rogel Zar and General Zod in the Phantom Zone. Then Clark and John travel to the Phantom Zone, and I think my favorite part of the book has to be when John punches General Zod in the face, and it's just, I just think it's the coolest thing ever. And then there's this really sick splash page of Superman.
You guys and your splash pages this week.
The splash pages are so good!
They're just so good!
They are so good. They are so good.
But then again, also, all the artwork in the Superman book is great, and yeah. If I had to give it a grade, I would definitely go with a 4.
Four?
I'm going to go with the 4. I'm getting a little sick of Rogel Zar.
I think everybody is. That's why I dropped the book.
You know, I want to see them do something else.
Right.
But other than that, I do like the storyline. And there's a special guest that shows up in the book, and I'm not going to ruin it because you're going to have to pick it up tomorrow.
There you go.
Hopefully with the Rogel Zar story, it does end at 12. I like to hope so, because Bendis usually writes long stories.
No, it does. This is part one of the House
of Hell
Unite.
This is part one.
It's part 5.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Part 5 of the other volume,
yes.
But it's part one of the House of Hell stuff.
Of United,
Rogel needs to leave.
Yeah.
But at least, he's not a bad villain. I just think he's boring because they've used him so many times.
Yes.
In just the one story.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true.
Bendis writes a villain, and they're like, use him always.
Yeah, I was like, why? Why use that villain?
Like with Amazing Spider-Man currently, they introduced a villain in Ryan Otley's and Spencer's number one that has He's been in 2 other issues, and he's going to be in issue 25. That should have been Rogel Zar. A big bad that shows up every once in a while.
Well, the biggest problem with Rogel Zar was that they introduced him in the Man of Steel miniseries, and they used that was the focal point. And they were like, all right, we beat him, and then go do your story, Bendis. But you maybe get rid of my villain in my miniseries. Why do that?
So he's been in the miniseries, then he's been in like every issue of this almost.
Yes.
In the beginning he was, and then he stopped, and then it was Zod, and it was him. And...
Yeah.
Well, in his defense, it's also his 1 year. It's his birthday.
Yeah, true.
You know, so.
It's also the character he made, so.
Yeah.
So why not?
Let him be.
That's true. And this week for my lovely book report.
That's your fault. It's got it stuck in the head.
It's your fault, Hunter. I did Last Stop on the Red Line by Dark Horse Comics. It's issue 1. It's written by Paul Mayberry, and the art is done by Sam Loftfy. Sorry. It's like a horror, magic, weird mystery story. The biggest parts of it, the best parts of the book, I think, was the actual mystery. It opens up. And it's going to be kind of like weird and triggering for some people. It does open up with something that's very similar to the Boston bombing during the Boston Marathon bombing. So it's kind of weird that it starts off with that and then jumps off into this weird deep dive into magic and horror. I think I get why they kind of did that as an opening.
Shock factor is always good.
It's great, and that's what I think they did it for, and it's part of the story because they tie it to the story.
Yeah, because imagine reading your friend reads a book and he goes, "They mentioned this large event
exactly
like, that happened in our world," and they're like, "Oh, it's in a comic too,"
and that's why they did it. What's cool though about the book, in the back of the book, they kind of give you the original pitch that Paul did. Yeah, that Paul actually pitched the Dark Horse.
That's awesome.
I've never seen that in a book before.
I gotta check that out.
And it was actually really cool that they did that. I think the art was okay. I think they could do a little bit better on the artwork.
I was skimming through it.
Yeah, I think they can do a little bit better on the artwork. The story, I think, is cool. It's kind of confusing a little bit, but I do...
It's a mystery.
It's a mystery. That's why...
They can't give you everything in issue 1.
It's also a 4-issue miniseries.
Yeah.
So it's kind of be like, here's a lot, and you have to do a lot without backstory.
Here's a lot, but a little.
And then you have to kind of piece it all together for this current situation.
What would you give it out of 5?
Out of 5? I'd probably give it 3.
A 3?
I only give it 3 because it is a mystery story, and I don't... So. You're missing a lot.
Yeah.
You're missing a lot. I definitely am going to continue reading it just to see where the story goes, because you kind of need to.
Yeah. When you read something like that with the mystery at the end, hooks you every time.
It has to. And it does. I'm a sucker. Every single time a mystery book comes out, I'm like, I'll read it. And I'm like, but what? We know it's a 4-issue miniseries.
Yeah. So it will finish. It will finish. It's not like it's going to get, like, left over.
Right. And this is the first quarter of it.
Yeah.
But like I said, the base, like, what I thought was cool that they did add the original pitch to it. And I'm a sucker for Boston. So, Red Sox all day.
Go Yankees, just saying. Also, I'm flipping through this, and halfway through the book, there is a guy in a Boston Bruins hat.
Boston all day!
Who, shut up, James, who looks like a homeless Wolverine.
You'll see. It's all, that's one of the big parts of the book. You'll absolutely see. If you definitely want, like, a cool horror book to check out, or a cool mystery book to check out, lately this really hasn't been many out.
Really, no.
So it's kind of a cool horror, dip your toe in there kind of story.
Usually I'm all over the mystery monster stuff.
Yeah.
Or usually I'm on top of the crime stuff, like Stiletto.
Yeah.
But this book is both of those, so I'm excited to check it out once, you know, it comes out tomorrow.
Yeah, it comes out tomorrow, so definitely check it out. And our big book of the week is...
Book of the week! That's going to come up bad in the mic.
That's fine. Woo! Okay. It's War of Realms number 4. We are at the halfway point. Marvel's calling... Yeah, that's a summer event.
Oh, the big spring event.
Yeah. You're talking seasons. Marvel's calling this part of the book going forward called Reclaim the Realms. If you haven't been reading, definitely pick it up. It's Jason Aaron's penultimate story for Thor.
Spoilers.
We're
going to talk
spoilers in this part because it does involve spoilers from issues 1-3.
But if you haven't been reading War of the Realms, get on it.
Yes. So we were definitely talking about spoilers. Our highlights, our lowlights, and what we think is going to happen going forward in the book. So if you want to skip, you can skip to the end. If not, we'll continue. So, with the War of Realms,
Hold on. We'll wait. All right, everybody read it. Okay.
Cool.
They read 3 books.
Here.
All right. Issue 1, we'll start with that.
Okay.
Big stuff in issue 1.
Yes. Massive setup. Okay, so issue 1 opens up. Not all... If you weren't reading Jason Aaron's Thor before this, it's kind of... not new reader friendly.
The first 11 issues of Thor's book ramps up to it.
Right. But it's also 10 years of Jason Aaron.
Exactly. With Jane Foster, with Thor, with the Unworthy stuff.
The whole Malekith part was all Jane Foster.
The Death of the Gods or whatever.
Right. That was all during Jason Aaron's run on Thor.
Thor got a thunder back in Marvel Now.
Yeah. So if you weren't reading it, it wasn't the greatest new reader friendly. It was cool if you just wanted to read an event.
It's also epic. Just a giant war.
It's the biggest war that Marvel's done that's not hero versus hero. Yeah,
since
Civil and War I'm was so glad that...
We're not getting Civil War 3?
Yeah. That we're not doing another hero versus hero story as an event. So issue 1 kind of opens up with Malekith's plan that's been in the background of Jason Aaron's run for years has finally come out, and he's now invading Midgard. He's taken over all the other realms, all... 8 other realms, no, 9 other realms of the universe, and now he says that's a Midgard, and we are smack dab in Manhattan, and all hell breaks loose. He drops his armies down, and Loki tries to stop his dad, with awful consequences, without spoiling what happens. Actually, kind of...
We are going to spoil it.
I mean, we can, because,
Loki done gets eaten.
Yeah, he gets eaten by Lefay.
It's insane. My jaw literally dropped when I read it. Just like, there's no way.
And then not only does Loki get eaten, Thor's captured.
Thor is captured.
The main hero, you thought, like, the thing about War of Realms, you go, oh, it's a Thor book.
You thought Thor was going to smack some giants.
It's going to be like, Thor's going to be the hero of the entire book, and it's going to be Thor beating up frost giants and monsters.
That's what I like about Aaron's run, though. Thor is always an underdog in Aaron's runs.
He's never been
top dog.
No.
Because there's Unworthy Thor. He loses the hammer in Original Sins. Jane picks it up. Jane's not the underdog. She's always been the show dog.
But she's a hero in a different aspect, though.
But Thor's underdog story is really good to see. Like, God who's always been immeasurable powers with... He was on the Avengers. He's the god.
Yeah.
When he's on any other book, he's a god. But when Jason Aaron writes him, he writes him as an underdog.
It's fantastic.
It's hard to see a god be an underdog.
Right.
And it's hard to write that, too.
It's very hard. How do you
write someone with immense power just as an underdog? Jason Aaron nails it.
He does. He absolutely nails it. And with issue 1, it ends with Thor being captured and being tortured by frost giants. And that's where issue 1 leaves you.
If you want to know what happens to Loki, read issue 12 of Thor.
Yes.
We won't spoil that.
Yeah, that's going to be the big linchpin for post-War Realm stuff.
Yeah.
Issue 2, we go into kind of the actual Battle of New York.
It skips a little bit into the world where everybody's got the new stuff.
You get to see some of it. Like, a lot of it's like, it's the Battle of New York and then the fallout of the Battle of New York, which is really cool. I really do like that they call it in the book the Battle of New York.
Which is the Avengers.
Which is the movie Avengers stuff. But also, because they call it the War Realms and they treat it like a war campaign, they call where the big fights take place Battle of whatever the name of. Which is awesome.
The Battle of Florida with the giant men is coming out. That guy should come
out
tomorrow.
This week. That's coming out tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
So, issue 2 kind of leaves you going, hey, Thor's captured, and Freyr's like, I gotta go help my son. I don't care if any of you guys come with me, but I would prefer if some of y'all come with me.
Strike Forces comes in.
And that's where this theme miniseries, the one-shots that split out, which are the Strike Force book, Strike Force,
War Avengers, Dark Elf,
and Land of the Frost Giants. But two of them,
War Avengers comes out tomorrow.
Yes. And Dark Elf came out last week.
Yeah.
The only thing we were missing is the
Land of the Giants.
Land of the Giants, which kind of gets spoiled in this week's issue 4.
A little bit.
And that's only because of publishing timing, which kind of, it's an offbeaten
but
thing.
But if you do what I usually do with events is buy all the books after they come out and get the checklist down, they'll be fine.
Yeah, it's buy now. It's great.
Well, of course.
Buy now. It's of fantastic.
Course. Support your local comic shop.
Always. But what's cool about what issue 2 does, it's the setup, it's the actual kind of, hey, we're screwed. Go out there and fight as hard as you possibly can.
And wear cool snowsuits.
Yeah.
Cap's got a vest on.
He does look kind of dope.
Spider-Man's got a helmet.
Yeah, he's got like Baldur. Everyone throws Baldur's helmet. No, it's just a helmet.
And then Iron Fist's wearing like a cool coat. And Luke Cage has got a nice little coat on. They're all cozy.
That's why we don't ride horses. Yeah. Oh, no, we didn't talk about the big thing in issue 2.
I was waiting for you to get to it.
Yes. So, issue 2.
Talking about horses.
Yeah, talking about the horses. That's what reminded me of the horse thing. Issue 2 kind of ends with them going, hey, we need to go, our strike forces, they got out of the Battle of New York, they all survived. And then Valkyrie's like, hey, I'll get Malekith's forces, Freyr, take everyone to Avengers Mansion. Or Avengers Celestial Body, home base. And I got this, and she gets murdered.
Straight up, I think she gets decapitated.
They take the horse, and they take it and put it on top of, like, well, I think it's Empire State Building.
Yeah.
And Roxxon, one of the back, the Drago's company.
Yeah.
It's like filming the entire thing. They put on like their CNN type of thing. It's called RNN, which I think is funny. And they just have it on TV, this murdered horse. Mm-hmm. And Jane's like,
murdered Pegasus.
Pegasus. Yeah, the Pegasus. No horns, not a unicorn. Yeah. yeah, that's the difference, guys. The difference between a Pegasus and a unicorn. One has a horn, one doesn't.
One's got wings.
Yeah. And so it's straight up murdered. And she then
gets so dead.
Freya's like, I gotta go. I'm taking these teams everywhere. Jane, you're the All Mother.
Which is a huge bomb to drop.
Which is
on
like
Jane, who's in recovery from cancer. Has no Thor power. She's like, shit.
Yeah, she's like, I want to.
What do I do now?
Right. All she wants to do the entire time is help. And then Freya's like, I'm leaving with the big guns.
Yeah.
You got this. In case it goes sideways, you're the All Mother. Figure this out.
And she has Heimdall and Daredevil with her.
That's issue 3.
Yeah.
So issue 3 is the Strike Force story.
Yeah.
They're doing this. It's a lot of cut and paste.
Three is very much a filler issue. Not so,
it is.
Not so, so.
No,
but
it is. It's the closing of the first arc. It's the closing of the first arc. It kind of goes, hey, this is what's happening.
We've lost, essentially.
We've lost. And now we have to go clean up. And Jane has this great plan going, hey, I'm taking Daredevil, and me and him are going to go see Heimdall, and we're going to try to rebuild the Rainbow Bridge. Right first. And it doesn't work. It does not work at all. They get messed up by the dark. The Black Rider Force is opened. That's the travel means for Malekith and his forces. And they just mess up Jane, Heimdall, and Daredevil, who now is a god without fear. Who can see everything.
Yeah, it's great just to give, because Heimdall gives him his sword.
Yes.
And it's good to see, like, Daredevil, who can't see, can literally now see everything. And they call him Sir Daredevil and Lord Daredevil, and I love it.
Yeah, I know. That's really cool. It's really cool. And he's on the cover of this week's issue.
The Disney issue.
The Pixar cover.
Yeah,
that's what we call them. Yeah, we call them. That's not what they are, but that's what we call them.
That's what it is.
And then they kind of, without getting deep dive, without spoiling the Strike Force books, you kind of need to read Strike Force
Dark Elf.
To understand issue 4, which is coming out tomorrow. And it opens up with them going, hey, Freyr is batshit crazy. She now is the keeper of the Black Bifrost, and she's swinging this massive sword of dark power, and she's trying to make sure people don't get through, and now we're into issue 4. What are everyone's thoughts about issue 4?
Issue 4 is a wild ride.
It's definitely a wild ride. I do like seeing in there with Thor in his arm.
That's the... Yeah. Who? By the way, they gave Thor back. It was not a spoiler. We knew who's going back. If they killed Thor in this thing before the... Oh, there's no need.
Thor's back.
Thor is not going to die at this point. If they did kill him, we knew he was coming back.
He'd be dead at the end, though.
Yeah. Comic books, guys. But, yeah, that Thor piece was cool. Without getting deep into it's to reclaim the realms. It's to reclaim the realms right now.
I believe Thor loses his arm in issue 13.
The prosthetic.
He loses the prosthetic.
Yeah,
in his
run,
solo
yes,
book. Yeah.
His solo book is 13.
And then in the next one, he gets the destroyer arm.
He gets the destroyer arm,
which looks so cool on him.
It's just I don't.
I know it's just a cool, but it's a prosthetic, and it's just metal. It just looks cool.
Borrowed it from Winter Soldier.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he looks heavy. So dope. Oh my god, he's in the War Avengers as well.
He looks heavy metal.
Yeah, he does. He does with his Jotun board in his hand. And he has like a hammer in his hand.
Yeah,
it looks like Thunderstrike's hammer mace, but it's not.
Yeah,
that's how kind of where the book's gonna lead you off. But before we get to that, there's like two major events.
Two huge things.
Really? One is the boss kind of like appearance. The Iron Allfather.
Iron Odin.
It's an armor that's built for Odin by Shuri and Tony and a bunch of other magic stuff. And they use that to go get Freyr, who's still possessed by the Black Bifrost.
She's going batshit.
Everything's going to hell. It's not like the best part. It's the best part of the book, but it's so weird to know that they're probably not coming back from this.
Nope.
I will not spoil what happens, but assume the worst.
It's safe to say, since we're at the halfway point, it's safe to say right now, what's happening?
Right.
Hopefully by the end, maybe they fix their problems, but yeah. Right now it's a big mess.
It's like
Thor is gonna be pissed.
You know what? It's like Game of Thrones. If they don't confirm by the next episode of Bodies there, assume that they may be alive still.
Yeah. Thor lost his brother.
Yeah.
Thor lost Valkyrie.
Yep.
And he's seemingly lost
both his
parents. Thor is on a rampage right
now. It's going to be insane. And I really think the scene with Odin and Freya kind of was great. You kind of wrapped them up.
It was caring.
Yeah, and it shows their relationship.
They gave him good justice.
Yeah, they're not, because Odin's been a dick like the last 4 years.
Yeah.
Or 3 years, really.
Jason Aaron hasn't really figured out how to write Odin to not be a dick, but that works out. Thor's favor.
Yeah, and it's great.
And Jane's favor when they have to fight
a little bit. Right, and it's great.
Yeah.
Freaking great. And I think, and you're right, since we are at the halfway point of this book, and we're at the Reclaim the Realms, and I think you're right.
I thought I knew what War of the Realms was going to be.
Nope.
Just not with the Thor event.
Nope.
Every issue is a twist that I did not see coming.
Nope. Everything has been massive. It's like, they should just make this, I want them to make this an animated movie so bad.
I wouldn't be
I want them, Marvel doesn't do animated movies well.
They've done a couple. I wouldn't be surprised if they try again.
Oh, actually, Feige said that they were going to do that.
Feige said that they're going to
do that. That was like 2 weeks ago. I forgot that.
That's cool.
They want to do animated stuff. That and the War of Realms is what they're looking at.
Well,
first.
Now that they're with Disney, they can
Disney Channel all day.
Well, they do. So DC does, in my opinion, bad shows. Young Justice is great. Don't get me wrong.
You're like, wait,
and then the old stuff, but the new DC shows aren't really that good.
Boom.
The new Marvel shows are all pretty good, but the DC movies are great. Animated movies are.
Hush's trailer came out today.
I almost shit.
I lost my mind.
The Turtle trailer came out last week.
Yeah. The trailer came out today.
Ooh.
And the Turtle one came out.
And Turtle came out last week too. But I think what Marvel's with this book feels like a movie.
Well, the thing with Marvel animated is they're gonna try them out on Hulu first, the shows. And if the animated shows work, like on a platform that has a slightly bigger budget than like the Disney Channel, then they will probably launch into movies.
Yeah. But like again, getting back with this whole War of Realms thing, I really think we're at the halfway point. I think going forward it's bet and clean up. We're all about to go in, and it's going to be Thor's biggest story for generations to come.
Spider-Man and the League of Realms just launched as well tomorrow.
That's true.
And I haven't had a chance to check it out yet,
either.
But it's because it's basically everyone wants it. It's on everybody's list.
Yeah.
If you're not in this War of the Realms list,
get it.
It's
a way to
even
if you get
don't read,
on War
even
Realms.
If you don't read the main title, you have to read one of the spinoffs.
Yeah,
there's no way.
They're great. All the spinoffs are great.
Yeah.
Even
usually when they do tie-ins and spinoffs to events like Civil War II, they're terrible.
They're terrible or not necessary.
Yeah, they're just like it's a story because look, an event. this has everything lined up so well. Kind of like how Scott Snyder, I know you're not a fan of metal as much as a lot of people, but Scott Snyder sets up his events and he writes them all down. Yes. And he puts everything.
And I love that. I love that. War of the Realms is set up. And I think, yes, War of the Realms written completely like that.
Jason Aaron sets up every chapter of this story.
Yeah, this is his penultimate. He's been planning this. It's been this not going all.
I believe he said that he was trying to do this since God of Thunder.
And it's fantastic. I'm glad they waited this long.
It's worth it. Now, if they did it like right before Civil War II, because that's like when he was doing his Jane Foster stuff. If they did it when Jane Foster was still Thor, it would still be great.
Yeah.
But having Jane be Thor, run her time, then have Thor come back, bring Baldur back, bring Hela back,
yeah,
and have everybody just...
Yeah.
It's just a mishmash of every Thor character ever.
It's fantastic. So, out of five, guys, what are we giving this
book? This is a five.
It's five.
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 Every War of the Realms is five.
Every War of the Realms. Go... If you're not reading it, go out and read it. Go to the Yoko comic shop. Go buy a copy. Go fish ones out. I don't care what you got to do. Go out there. Support Jason Aaron. His magnificent writing for Thor for the last like 10 plus years.
Almost 10 years.
Almost 10 years, yeah. Hey, Danny, want to bring us home?
All right, guys. Thanks for watching. You can head to our website, androidscomics.com, to check out this week's previews and new releases. Follow us on Instagram at androids_comics and Twitter at androidscomics for up-to-date news. Don't forget to support your local comic book shops. We'll see you guys next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.